Well, the Summit County Council will be attending the Camas Valley Business Association annual meeting at the Camas Library tomorrow, starting at 11:30, before driving back to the Rich and Services Building for a work session starting at 2:30. And on the phone with me now with a rundown of the meeting, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the meeting at the Richens Building, there will be an introduction to representatives for Senator Mitt Romney. Anything in particular on the county's agenda for this meeting?
No, not particular. The staff of Senator Romney's office asked to be on the agenda. I think they're making their rounds around Utah right now. But I think the county council would have a few things that they'd want to talk about. They've been working with the EPA on the purchase of the Gilmore property. There's always the topics around the Central Wasatch Commission, any other federal lands issues. And then recently, you know, they've been interested in talking about forest health issues as it relates to wildfire and, of course, water quality issues, which is always on their mind.
Okay, so the conservation area designation for the Wasatch Front, that's part of what the Central Wasatch Commission looking at?
That's correct. And, you know, our council has been supportive of that effort. So they just want to make sure that Senator Romney's staff and Senator Romney himself would be aware of our support.
Okay. And what about the Public Lands Initiative?
Well, the Public Lands Initiative, of course, that was an effort that was within a larger bill that Congressman Bishop forwarded a couple of years ago. And it included lands all over the state. We were interested in the forest lands up in the Uinta Mountains. We've been approached by several local groups to try and make that effort again, if there's an opportunity. So I'm sure the council will take advantage of having Senator Romney's staff to discuss that for a few minutes.
Okay. Let's see. Back to the agenda. You will have members of the Morgan County Council discussing a section of the Weber River. It's called the Hennepin to Taggart Reach, or HenTag. Can you give us a better idea of where this is?
Well, basically from the Weber River from Hennepin, the northern reach of Hennepin to the Taggart area. There's a natural place for people to come out of the river there if they're on tubes or small boats. It's a very heavily used part of the Weber River. The way that the staff materials read is that it's probably the second heaviest use for daily use in the state behind the Provo River. So what the concern is that there's natural things that happen. There's trash that gets left. There's the regulation of people getting out and into the river, and it sometimes causes some safety problems too. So we both counties experience calls to our sheriff's office about that. So I think it's just an interest of one of the commissioners. From the county, and they want to come in and talk to our council about it.
Okay, anything that they're proposing?
It didn't look like there was any hard proposal, just, awareness probably at this point. Maybe a suggestion that we work together in coming up with some solutions on that. I'm sure we'll be discussing, whose responsibility is what along each stretch of that, since the put-in is in Summit County, and the takeout is in Morgan County. So we'll be dealing with that.
All right. I mean, basically, it's an area getting loved to death by visitors.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very popular area, and there's not a lot that can be done about the number of people necessarily, unless we go into some stronger regulation. But certainly, there's probably some things we can do on. How it affects either public or private land. I think it's mostly private land.
There was a report in the Salt Lake Tribune yesterday about how Moab busting at the seams with tourism. Is Summit County one of the counties that would support a change so that restaurant tax revenues could be used to mitigate tourism rather than just attract it?
Yeah, I'm not, you know, there hasn't been any discussion of that specifically, so I don't know the answer to that. That does become one of the issues is, you know, as these impacts come, I mean, certainly we're a tourism-based economy here in Summit County, and we're always seeking to make sure that we have the right revenue streams to deal with those impacts. So it's always a discussion around the impacts of surrounding tourism and what revenue sources we have. And that one specifically, the restaurant tax, not sure if the county would support that or not. But, you know, it's one of the ones that's out there for discussion. But it has a very strong nexus to increasing restaurant activity at this point. I'm sure that one would have a difficult lift.
All right. There will also, the recommendation of the RFP committee on mental health services contract. The staff report said that the committee is recommending the University of Utah Health. Can you detail some of the reasons why this agency was recommended, do you think?
Yeah, there were several reasons why, and I'm sure that this will be the most of the discussion with the council tomorrow. From the staff packet, I read that certainly the one item that the University of Utah had that was fairly strong was a much stronger present network already within Summit County. So a network of providers that could immediately step in and provide services to those that are uninsured and those that are getting some sort of assistance. It offered the selection or the recommendation committee was intrigued by the network or the Unicare system that already exists with the University of Utah. Those being the biggest ones, the amount of folks that were already getting services within Summit County from the University of Utah. So I would say that those were the three strongest ones that I read in glancing through the packet.
Okay. And so is the council ready to make a decision on this? Or?
I'm not going to speculate on that. I think they're going to have a lot of information to sift through. Certainly they've heard the interviews from both proposers. They've been in this process. They have a committee that's making a recommendation. So they're set up to make a decision, but that's up to them on whether they're ready to make a decision or not.
Okay, and what's the cost of the contract?
The cost of the contract specifically, I mean, it's several years over $1 million. And that's the reason it goes in front of the council is that it has such a large dollar amount associated with it, kind of variable depending on the number of clients that are seen. It's a large contract.
All right. Let's see. The council also looking at the Kimball Junction Master Plan. You'll have a joint meeting with the Blue Ribbon Committee and the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. And we've got a new major new player here, Dakota Pacific, the new owners of the Boyer Tech Park. So the plan is to get the master plan, the neighborhood plan done first before we start talking with Dakota Pacific?
Well, I mean, Dakota Pacific has not made any application yet for the property that they own. So there's really nothing to look at specifically there yet. I think they're looking at the neighborhood planning effort with much interest, I'm sure, because they're in within that boundary. So there's really no nexus at this point because there's no application from Dakota Pacific. So the only nexus is that they own the 52 acres of the tech park.
So have they given any input or will they give any input?
I don't know that specifically. I mean, there's as public comment is made on this process, I'm sure that they have interest, and they could make comments just as anybody else could. But specifically, until they apply for some type of use determination or change in use, under the current development agreement that exists for the tech park. That's when we'll really see any action from that.
And the goals of the master plan, I mean, it's all about traffic, walkability, a mix of businesses.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about this process is it's really supposed to be people-centered. You know, the mixed-use development concept, walkability, how transportation and traffic interact with the land use, how properties redevelop in the Kimball Junction area as current development there ages out, or in the case of the Tech Park, which is kind of the largest parcel still undeveloped, as it goes through its process. Very different look at this than what has happened in the past. We're looking at it holistically about how it can all work together, and kind of setting a blueprint per se of how we want it to look, act, and feel in the future. That was the focus of the Kimball Junction Neighborhood Master Planning Committee.
Okay. Let's see. You are the council also hearing a request for a special exception for a lot in Glenwild asking to exceed the grading limits on a slope for a single family home. The staff recommending denial. How come?
Well, this one is an interesting one. In reading through the packet this morning, it's already got an existing structure on it, an existing home, and it has already had the 20,000 square foot limit of disturbance on the property due to the driveway and the home that's already there. So this would be increasing that disturbance by 16,000 square feet, and right now the limit per code is 20,000 square feet. So the current structure and its driveway already meet that limit and have already been done. So this increase is quite a large increase over what the code allows, and that is the purpose of the special exception as well as the recommendation from the staff.
Okay. Hey, wanted to ask you a couple things off the agenda. What's going on with all the dead trees there at the Ecker Hill Park and Ride?
Well, you know, the landscaping was put in very late in the process last year. Still have an open contract because that project is not completed yet. So any landscaping that didn't survive the winter is going to be redone. So, you know, those will be replaced as this contract winds up.
Okay. And that's on the contractor's dime.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all part of their contract. That's correct.
Yeah. Any guesses why it didn't survive? Was it just too cold or just not enough water? Or?
I have no idea what the cause is. They probably run the gamut with new landscaping. It could just be the time of year that they were put in. Sometimes when things are put in the fall, they have a little less likelihood of making it than in other times of year. So I'm sure that the contractor will be going back and making sure that those are in better spots and in better condition as the year moves on.
All right. Also, what about the active transportation master plan? When are we going to see that?
Yeah, so Carolyn Rodriguez has had that ready to tee up for a couple of weeks. We've been kind of putting that off because of some other agenda items that have taken some higher precedence. So very soon, I don't have a specific date in front of me here, but I would say within the next few weeks, that'll be teed up. And we're also concerned about having a full council in front of us for that. And council schedules have been a little variable over the last few weeks because trying to get some vacations in before our next round of big items hit. So we should have a full council for the next couple of weeks, and then in the end of May, and we'll be teeing that up at that time.
Do we know what it'll say about the 224 underpass or overpass, just that safe crossing somewhere?
I know it's going to say something. I don't have it in front of me to give you the specifics on that. You know, I'm quite certain that safe crossing of 224 is part of the active transportation plan, and as well as other places in our county. So, in order to encourage people to walk and bike in this community, we're going to have to make some of our larger vehicle facilities grade separated in order to do that. So I'm sure we'll see something about that.
All right. And finally, now that the approvals for the Gilmore parcel have been passed, what's the schedule for the county to technically close on the property?
So I'm kind of expecting that we'll be closed within the August to early September timeframe. We still have to go through a federal comment period, published in the Federal Register on the administrative order on consent. That's a set process that has to happen. And then, of course, the documents that the council authorized signature on and I authorized signature on this last week then have to be processed through several federal departments to get signed as well. So that's going to take some time, but we feel like we've set extended the closing date far enough out to make that happen, and so did our federal partners that are moving those documents through.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't have anything else this week, Leslie. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow night to discuss active transportation improvements on Park City's main corridor, also new uses for the McPullen Barn, and it won't be long before the new owners of Park City Mountain Resort's parking lots will be before the Planning Commission looking for some development approvals there. Here with a preview, I have Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with that. We learned last week that Vail Resorts has sold the three surface parking lots there at the base of Park City Mountain Resort to PEG Companies, a development group out of Utah County. The development at the base of the resort has been approved for, what, like 20 years or something. We're hearing that it could be a full-service hotel, spa, some residential units, some workforce housing, commercial space, ski rentals, things like that. Do we have a development agreement that outlines all of the approved uses?
We have a development agreement that's in force since the 1990s, and there are some vested unit equivalents. What the development actually wants to be is we don't know yet. Until they submit an application to us, we're not going to know. But yes, remember that this is probably the fourth time that things have been through the cycle. They tried to do the development on the base area and tried to entitle it back in the 90s where they got the development agreement. And then in the early 2000s, Four Seasons Hotel attempted to do a base area development in that location and ultimately ended up going to Jackson Hole. But reestablished some of the traffic patterns and some of the other things that have been going on. And then Woodward came in the mid-2000s and once again reopened the development agreement in order to achieve the goals that Woodward needed to achieve that ultimately ended up out in Summit County. So there's some rights there. If they come in and want to talk to us, which is fine, they have that right. What we want them to do is not do the standard stuff. What we want them to do is solve some of the technical issues that we have at the resort base that probably were not anticipated in the 1990s. I mean, a lot has changed, Leslie. We didn't anticipate the sort of rideshare companies. And we don't know quite how to react to them, as you see on Main Street or Sweet Alley or anything else. We did not anticipate the effect of the second home market, rightly so. We didn't anticipate group season passes, either Icon or Epic. Those were unforeseen circumstances in the 1990s and all the way through the 2000s, and now our system has to be able to react to those kind of future-looking things. So what we're going to ask PEG to do and Vail Resorts to do is respond to those things. So it's a bit of a convoluted situation. The resort and the base area are intermixed in that there's some obligations that need to be fulfilled for employee housing. There's some obligations in terms of ski area capacity that it's going to be Park City Mountain's responsibility and not PEG. We need to understand commissary work and how we do all the back of the house work.
Well, that's what I was going to say. When I hear vested unit equivalents, the first thing I think of is all of the problems we had with the Treasure Hill development. Do we have the same problems here in terms of how big of a project we have? I mean, from what we think is a 400,000 square foot development that now is up to 1 million square feet?
Yes and no. Sorry to be a wimp on that answer, but the unit equivalent equation was developed in the 80s, and it wasn't necessarily designed to respond to 2019. I do not expect this to grow like the previous project, in that there's a little different set of controls on the unit equivalent at the base area. And there's a limited amount of space on those parking lots. So it won't grow like the previous project. We will have some difficult conversations about what can happen there.
Park City Housing Manager Jason Glidden said last week that because the development approval goes so far back, PEG only has to adhere to the housing resolution from 20 years ago. So what is that? What is that requirement for?
Well,
them?
Currently, the housing resolution from 20X years ago is they're supposed to deliver housing units, and they have an obligation for 23 when the Marriott was constructed that has not been fulfilled, and an approximately 80 beds for the remainder of the project. If we end up reopening the master development plan, then they'll be subject to the 2017 housing resolution. That'll be a subject of hard discussions with the housing authority in order to make sure that we're delivering the housing that the resorts need.
So the city might like to have that happen, but they don't necessarily have to reopen it.
Well, I never like anything. You know that about me. But I'm going to look at whatever PEG brings in, and we're going to make sure that they're in compliance with the current vested rights and make sure they're in compliance with our current rules and regulations as best we can. Same as we do with any other project throughout the town. Bruce gets crabby, decides what to do next.
So the Park City Mountain Resort, Vail Resorts, has been sitting on this MPD now for decades. Why do they get to cash in on the original terms when the town has changed so much?
Because the development agreement is a written contract, and there are vested rights that go with that contract. The town and the resort enter into this contract, and for the most part, all of the development rights were stripped off of the mountain, including, if you'll remember, they wanted to put condominiums where the Three Kings lift is and all the way up the side of that hill. And there was a proposal back in the late 90s, early 2000s to put a golf course all the way up to the top of Payday. All that's been stripped off and put in the base area, which is very good planning. And so both parties entered into a contract that is still valid and the right thing to do. They can't just expire this stuff with all those underlying agreements in place.
Yeah, but this entitlement banking, I mean, why isn't that considered when we redo our land management code? I mean, even my Visa gift card takes away money every year if I don't use it.
Well, and I think you're right. And I think our level of sophistication in 2019, 2020 is way different than when I was on the Planning Commission in the early 1980s about how to do development agreements and expiration clauses. We do have a couple of development agreements that have expiration clauses in them, but for the most part, that's not the way you write a contract. The resort has made the improvements necessary to be consistent with their contract. They're going to have to come up to speed on their employee housing commitments, and then we'll see what PEG wants to do.
And so for the folks who have been a little bit concerned about the Woodside Park development, phase 1 and 2, and about the density that's going to create in this neighborhood, people haven't seen anything yet. I mean, we're already concerned about traffic and density. How do we deal with that here? And, you know,
well, we're gonna look and see if we can't drive this thing into the 2019s, 2020s about what we need to do. Right or wrong, Treasure delivered up-to-date traffic information on all those streets. Going back to Woodside 2, That area is zoned the same as the ski area density. So if the municipality was not doing the development, you could see all kinds of condominiums in there that are consistent with the resort commercial zone and not the historic district zone. So as far as I know, Woodside 2 is consistent with current zoning, and we're not bending any rules for the city.
Okay. Well, stay tuned, because that's coming back.
Oh, yeah.
During work session, then, an information item on Deer Valley Drive and 224 about pedestrian and bike improvements. We're talking just over the one-mile segment between Bonanza Drive and the Marsac Roundabout. Any idea what this update's about?
There's two things going on. Transportation Planning is trying to make Deer Valley Drive a little bit more bike and pedestrian-friendly. And so there's a trail system that they're talking about doing that's probably going to be on the east side, hillside underneath the power line. We need to help the Airy residents get across the street there. You know, when I go home at night, I see people walking down Deer Valley Drive and not down the bike path. And it's like, what did we just do wrong? Why are these people on a four-lane road? So transportation planning is going to put forth some ideas on how to do that. More importantly, I think, is the tunnel under 248 that's going to go in where the current Hawk sign is. And if you ask me what that acronym is, I don't remember. But it goes between the high school and Cook Drive. And so we won't be stopping traffic at that location for every group of people that want to kind of cross there. It's going to be a good project. It's going to work just like our current tunnel system at McPullen Barn or underneath Bonanza. This one's kind of trick, and I think you heard from Transportation Planning that they've figured out how to make it net zero, which is what your reporter tried to talk about on the radio yesterday. So we have some very sophisticated solar panels on the walkway system. So the snowmelt system should be net zero, according to the calculations.
All right. Back to the Deer Valley Drive bike and pedestrian trail. I mean, what we'd kind of heard of, it would require a narrowing of Deer Valley Drive, so we'd need UDOT approval, as well as, like, new curb and gutter to add an off-road.
Yes, that's
trail.
True. I mean, it's a UDOT road. It's a state highway. It's 224. It serves the state. They would narrow some lanes in order to increase the bike path and the location for everything else. And that's consistent with the city's complete streets policy, which says you cannot establish, or you should not establish, the priority for automobiles over other vehicle users. And so as we go through the city, transportation planning is looking at our various obligations to make sure that we're equitable on all user groups.
Okay. Let's see. On the agenda, the Planning Commission considering a conditional use permit amendment for the McPullen Barn. This new CUP would allow tours and educational events for up to 25 people. Who's requesting the modification?
The city is. The city council burned about $1 million making sure the barn was more protected against earthquakes, giving it a new roof, doing a gorgeous job doing historic window replacements. And now what they want to do is demonstrate their commitment to historic preservation and let small groups with a docent into the barn and say, this is what we looked like 150 years ago.
Okay. So the barn parties and the square dancing, they'll come back as well?
Well, the barn party and the square dancing are going to happen in the shed. They're not going to happen in the barn. Planning department still has the usual issues that we deal with every day. We don't want parking on 224. We don't want U-turns on 224. We want to use the parking on the north side of the tunnel, and we want people to shuttle. So that's why the groups are limited to 25, and that's why the groups have a docent, and they need to come and get a permit to make sure that we have 224 protected. We're not interested in running an amusement park.
Okay. Finally, I just wanted to ask you the notice for KPCW's expansion. The expansion was approved by City Council last week. The notice is still out in the front of the station here. Do we have permission then to pull that off, or do or is that kind of like the mattress tag?
That's like the mattress tag. We'll come and get that. There is an appeal period after the approval, and we need to make sure the public is aware before we come and pull the sign down after a final action. And so the city council has taken final action on your expansion. We'll come and get the sign after that appeal period is done, so that if somebody isn't happy with what decision the council made, then they'll have an appeal.
Okay, so it's like election signs. You put it up, you take it down?
Exactly. Don't touch our signs.
Okay. Bruce, anything else you want to mention?
I just want to recognize Caitlin Barhorst, who's our new historic district planner. She's with me today. She's not allowed to talk yet because she's still learning her job. But this Caitlin's got a tremendous background. Undergraduate in architecture, graduate in architecture, graduate in historic preservation. She just spent the last year in Germany as an employee. So she's coming to us, she's getting up to speed, and we're really happy to have her.
Okay, so the new Anya?
All my people are individuals. Anya was perfect, Caitlin is perfect, but they're not the same.
Okay, well, congratulations on the new job. Probably make a lot more money as an architect, just saying, but...
She's with.
Okay, Bruce, thanks. KPCW News Time now, 8:42. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Two Park City High School seniors have organized Utah's first ever all-girls coding event. Joining me now in the studio to tell us about it, I have Claire Oberg and Sela Serafin. Good morning, girls.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, so do you want to start, Claire, and just tell us when and where this is happening?
So this event is taking place on April 27th, this Saturday, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Park City High School.
Okay.
And it's open to all girls in grades 8 through 12 in the state of Utah.
Oh, okay. So do you have some kind of out-of-district people who are registered for it?
Yeah, a few.
Yeah, we have a lot from, like, Carbon County, kind of the Salt Lake area. But it's been interesting to see how people from all over have been, like, interested in signing up, especially people from Price, like, coming all the way up here. It shows, I definitely think, it gives proof of the fact that, like, people are into this kind of thing and that there really isn't something else like it.
Okay, well... Explain what's going to happen. I have no idea what's going to happen during an all coding event.
Sure. So basically what happened is the girls will get there and we want to allow them to really explore potential careers and like see what it'd like to actually, what it would be like to be in the technology industry. And so we're going to allow them to choose from three different kind of career paths. So either in terms of research, user experience, design, and programming. And they'll do workshops based on what they're interested in. And these workshops are going to be hosted by members of the Qualtrics team. So they're going to help us learn or teach these girls about their platform and kind of coach them in a way. And then after they go on their different workshops, they're going to come together in different teams. So we'll take one person from, say, the programming workshop, one person from the user experience workshop, and someone from...
Research.
The research group, and then they'll all come together and so work as a team from those different roles. So that's really what it's like kind of in the real world, and they'll be able to experience what it's like to collaborate with different team members, work through those sorts of things, and then end with a product at the end of the day that they'll present to judges, and we will award first, second, and third place, and then a teamwork award.
Okay, so the teams aren't just the Park City team or the Carbon School. Mm-hmm. They're all going to be from everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ah, okay. So what kind of experience is needed?
None. Just an interest in, we want people who are interested in entrepreneurship and then just people who want to learn. That's kind of it.
Yeah.
You don't need any experience.
Yeah. So what's your experience then in this?
I've taken computer science classes all 4 years of high school. And we both started the Girls in Tech Club at Park City High School last year, basically to promote girls getting interested in STEM and computers and technology. And so we started that club last year. What?
Oh, and then we ended up making an app last year. That we did. It's called Food for Good. And so we eventually want to probably integrate it into the community, but it's to facilitate the communication between restaurants with extra food and food banks. And we actually worked with the Christian Center here to talk about how it could potentially work with them.
Great. So you're going to have some coding instructors then that are going to kind of give these perform the workshops then?
Yes. Yeah. So people from Qualtrics, which is a Provo-based company, mm-hmm. are going to come and they're going to teach like all three workshops. And for the programming one specifically, they'll be there to help teach the kids who have no experience and the kids who have a little bit of experience. And then there will be like mentors there throughout the whole day. If anyone gets stuck or like can't figure out how to do it, there will be people there who are like there to help.
Awesome. So have you been to something like this, or how did you guys come up with the idea for it?
We were looking for something like this, actually, and we found out there's really nothing going on in Utah or like that many in neighboring states. And we decided to do it because we had started our club at the beginning of this year, and we both have noticed kind of high school clubs in general, it's really hard, to make it more than just like an after-school school thing where people are just checking off requirements and, you know, wanting to get their club credit. So we wanted to just have an overall purpose and goal that we'd be working toward and be able to allow girls from within our club to be able to work on that from different kind of areas. So giving them experience in like technology while helping to plan the event. So some of them would be working on like building our website, some working on, you know, getting sponsorships. So having people work from all levels so they're getting that experience at the same time, which I think is a really valuable experience that doesn't come out of all school clubs.
So I had heard that you wanted to hold it for like 24 hours, like a marathon, but that you guys are next with that.
Yeah.
That's the goal in the future.
That's the future goal. So most hackathons are like a pretty common event in tech companies and like and especially on college campuses. Mm-hmm. And in those scenarios, it's 24 hours straight. So it's like a long event. But since it's like our first year doing it, and Sila and I have never been to a hackathon before, but our club advisor, Ms. Henderson, she was the one who like suggested this idea. And she has been, I think she's been to one before, or she like knows a lot about it. And since it's like our first time, we were like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do 24 yeah. full hours. And it was going to be a lot more difficult and more difficult to get people to
same with like interested since we're coming. Hosting at the school, there are like certain requirements for how many like teachers you need at the location and picking people, but it's definitely something we'll keep in mind for like the future. And we want also, like, since it is the first time, allowing girls to like get a little taste of it before they want to like commit for this for 24 hours.
Yeah, that's 12 hours is a lot.
Yeah.
So is there a cost to this?
No, it's completely free for everyone to attend.
Really fortunate with sponsorships. That's like kind of what's enabled it all to happen, and GoFundMe. So a lot of people in the community have, you know, helped us out.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because I had heard you raised almost $2,000, and that is to do what? Pay for the snacks or for the chaperones or?
Mm-hmm. So for the event, we're providing breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so most of the cost is going towards like paying for the meals, but we also bought t-shirts that like everyone's gonna get, and then like with the help of like all of our sponsors, we've like gotten a bunch of other things for like a swag bag to give away to people at the beginning, and then we bought prizes to give at the end.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty. It's going to be really fun.
Can I come?
No. Yeah, honestly.
So, again, no experiences. Can people still register for this if they were interested? I mean, it's coming up.
The website is pchackathon.weebly.com, and there's just a register button, and so just do that. And then we'll send you an email kind of getting your interests in terms of what workshop you'd be wanting to do.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us? You've got, I think,
it'll be
50 people? How many do you have? So
yes, we have about 55 people.
And our goal is 75, so encourage you.
Yeah, it'll be super fun. I mean, overall, it's just a very comfortable environment to learn how to program. That's kind of why we wanted to do it as well, because it's sort of an intimidating field to go into, like, just without any experience. So it's really safe and making it fun, and it'll be great.
Yeah, so have you reached out to, like, North, South, Summit, and Wasatch school districts?
Yes, we have. Okay. A few of them have signed up, so
okay.
Lucky.
All right, well, great job.
Yeah, thank
you. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
That's Clara Berg and Sila Serafin, again, with the all-girls coding event happening Saturday. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:50. 8:51 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, in celebration of the completion of the Transcontinental Railroad 150 years ago, a number of events taking place. One of those at the Camas Library. In the studio with details, I have South Summit librarian Lee Whiting along with Katie Wang from Park City Film. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Lee, tell us what's happening in Camas.
Well, we have an exhibit currently in place. It is the Chinese helped build the railroad. The railroad helped build America. Katie's going to talk a little bit more about it. It is at the South Summit Services Building through the 30th of April, and it will soon be moving to the Park City Library on May 1st.
Okay. And what's there?
What's there, it's a collection of photographs, historic photographs, but also didactics telling you all about the history of the Chinese workers, immigrant workers, who helped build the Transcontinental Railroad. And it tells a very full story. There are about 60 panels in the exhibit. It's quite extensive and very well prepared and curated.
Okay. I think I read that it's only open Tuesdays and Fridays. Is that true?
Yeah, and by appointment only. And part of the challenge is in our facility, we have a multipurpose space. So there are others who use some part of the exhibit space for other purposes. So we've reserved Tuesdays and Fridays, full days, 10 to 6. So this Tuesday, today, the 23rd, Friday, the 26th, and Tuesday, the 30th, are open for public viewing hours. Otherwise, call ahead by appointment and we can let you in.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, they just have to check the schedule then.
Yes, please.
Okay. Is there a minimum of how many people have to be for those special appointments?
Not at all. We're happy to let anyone in as long as it's open.
Okay. And then, Katie, how is Park City Film involved?
So we're part of a group of organizations in the county. When Spike 150 kind of came about, they really wanted to activate counties across the state. And Summit County said, yeah, we'd love to be part of it. The railroad, of course, came through Echo. And so we got involved with helping to bring this exhibit from Stanford University, and we wanted to make sure that it went into different parts of the county. So starting with Camas, Park City, and then we'll be going over to Colville to the Ledges Event Center. So it'll be there for the month of June. So just want to make sure that there's broad exposure. And really the intent through all of the events going on across the state are really to make sure that we're presenting an inclusive and complete history of the building of the railroad. And 80% of the workforce on the western side of the railroad, they were Chinese laborers. And that's completely been written out of the history until now. And so part of the Stanford exhibit, since Leland Stanford, of course, much of his wealth came from the railroads, they felt that it was important to make sure that they were telling the story of these laborers, many of them were single, had no families. So when they died, their history died with them. So it took quite a bit of effort to kind of revive and really uncover who these people were, where they came from, their intentions of being here. And a lot of them were actually recruited specifically to help build the railroad. So what we're doing at Park City Film is kind of our portion of that, is we're showing a film called The Chinese Exclusion Act. It was produced by PBS. And really what it looks at is the first piece of federal legislation that was intentionally restricting access to the United States for a certain class of people, the Chinese people. And actually nothing's ever been passed that's been quite that restrictive. But we had no immigration policy until then. And there are all these people coming in, you know, it's these other, the yellow peril, they're taking our jobs, they're different than us. I mean, the rhetoric we still hear today with other immigrant groups. And so this was the first time they said, nope, we're going to close the gates. No one else can come in from China specifically. And so that legislation really has informed U.S. immigration policy to the current day. When you think about being born in America, I'm a first-generation American. I'm an American citizen because I was born here, not because my parents were American. That's because a Chinese person sued the U.S. government and got all the way to the Supreme Court and said, I was born here. I should be an American. It doesn't matter where my parents are from. And so it's because of that legacy, because the Chinese people won the kind of acts that were taken against them, but also their reaction to that has really informed kind of what it means to be American, who do we let in, who gets to stay. And so this film really illustrates not just what that means for the Chinese people, but for Americans in general. So that'll be May 2nd, 7 o'clock. It's a free screening. It's on a Thursday.
Okay. Any screenings in Camas, or this is just going to be...
This will just be the one. And then there are other exhibits. You know, there's... And I know some folks are coming in later on in the coming weeks, but there's an exhibit at the Kimball Arts Center, Zilin, Chinaman's Chance at Promontory Point. There'll be a whistle stop over in Echo. So if you go to spike150.org, it lists all of the events that are happening across the state, which are pretty amazing. You can actually see the golden spikes. This is the first time the three spikes have been reunited down at the Utah Museum of Fine Arts. But you know, it's a pretty momentous moment in U.S. history, and so it's exciting to be so close to it here in Park City and to be able to celebrate that. But you can go to parkcityfilm.org and check out our piece. We're also linked to the exhibit that Lee referenced. It's over in Camas. That's coming over to Park City on May 1st. So you can see the exhibit, see the film. I think it ignited a great conversation about
Okay. Lee, we got you here. Anything else going on there at the library?
We have an exhibit that's a permanent exhibit sponsored by the 1% for the Arts and the Summit County Arts Advisory Board. It was recently installed, and we had our grand opening reception a week ago. It's called Yambo by the artist Day Christensen. It's a beautiful exhibit. You just need to come and take a look. At the same time, through the end of April, we have some children's art from the South Summit Elementary School, including a 16-panel graphic novel produced by the fourth grade class, sponsored by the Beverly Sorensen Arts Grant. And it's a beautiful thing. It's The Tale That Saved the Rail, which is a story about a young Chinese boy named Ming and his mouse who saved the railroad. So please come and take a look. That's through the 30th. We also have in celebration of poetry for National Poetry Month on April 29th, the countywide fourth and fifth grade poetry recitation contest. That'll be Monday at 6 to 8 on the 29th.
Okay. All right, anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I just want to thank Summit County. They've been great supporters financially and otherwise of this exhibit. They've also sponsored a new collection of books to come in, both the Park City collection and the Summit County Library collections, that really tell a more inclusive history of the building of the railroad. So that'll be the enduring legacy for Spike 150. We've got some great events going on this month, but you know, we want to make sure that the messaging and the history remains, so the stories continue to be told accurately. So parkcityfilm.org for our part in the South Summit Library.
Thanks for mentioning the books. I completely forgot. Yes, we have a $1,000 grant dedicated to both the Park City Library and the Summit County Library System. So there's an extensive collection of books very specific to the railroad.
Right, and for all ages, you know, from children all the way to adults. So it's not kind of dry history, but, you know, everything from fiction to nonfiction, you know, graphic novels, everything.
Picture books, yes.
Yep. Okay.
We're excited.
Lee Whiting, Katie Wang, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time, now 8:59.